Hi, this is Christopher Atkins. I'm totally naked. Please watch and listen to the Pop Culture Preservation Society. It is a lot of fun. Wink, wink.
Welcome, everyone, to one of our last supersized summer rerun episodes. You guys, we're going to start season 13 pretty soon.
Wow, I can't believe
it. You excited?
Everybody stay tuned. Yeah.
We've been hard at work already recording some really fun conversations I think you guys are going to really like. But today we are replaying episode 55. And we've talked several times in this episode, you know, we're Gen X, right? Generation X. But in many of our episodes, we've realized that we are the Sesame Street generation. In every opening for 180 some odd openings, we call ourselves the Big Wheel generation. We are, you know, the Little House on the Prairie generation. We are also the Free to Be You and Me generation. And episode 55, which we're replaying today, is all about our love of this just iconic and really meaningful album to all of us Gen X kids.
It's one of my, you know, we have 185 episodes or something, and this one continues to be one of my favorites, I think, because I cried for a good portion of it. I felt like I was on the verge of tears the whole time. I think the only time the tears made it in was when we were talking about maybe it's all right to cry. I don't know. But I felt like I was crying the whole time. And it's because it's so emblematic of what I was listening to in my bedroom in 1973, in 1974, in 1975. You know every single one of these songs. You know all of the words. And we'll talk all about that in the episode. Here's something that dropped into my lap today, and I got that same choked up feeling like I was going to cry. And that is that the Carl Museum of Picture Book Art in Amherst, Massachusetts, will be having a Free to Be You and Me exhibit. Starting in November and running through April. And my heart stopped when I saw this.
Oh, I bet you peeped out some of our listeners. Yeah. Well, I'm glad it started again.
Let's just say that. She's fine.
I am guessing that a lot of our followers and listeners right now, their hearts might be stopping because this is one of our most popular episodes. And whenever we post Free to Be You and Me content in our social media, people are all over it. I mean, this definitely impacted our generation, much like you said, Michelle. You know, we are the Free to Be You and Me generation. The messages that came out and through this record, and for me also the television show, that is really also in my mind. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That just resonated the messages of that time period really well.
Yeah, for a lot of people, it's the album, and we can all just close our eyes and see that bright pink album and the font. But it's also, for many people, the television special and those skits and those baby puppets. And
the puppets,
all the iconic cartoons and the songs and little Michael Jackson dancing.
Yes.
So, Kristen, where did you say this exhibit is going to be?
The exhibit is going to be at one of my favorite places in the whole world. They say that Disneyland is the happiest place on earth. For me, it's the Eric Carle Museum of Picture Book Art. It's a tiny little museum in the Berkshires of Massachusetts that was started by Eric Carle, or in honor of Eric Carle. No, maybe started by Eric Carle, the guy who wrote The Very Hungry Caterpillar. Mm-hmm. This is his museum. It's beautiful. It has all sorts of art from your favorite picture books that you grew up with. And so it's the kind of place that I walk through with a lump in my throat the whole time, because every time you come upon a piece of art, you recognize it as something that your mother read to you when you were a child. It's really, really impactful. And the exhibit is called Free to Be You and Me, 50 Years of Stories and Songs. And this is how they describe it. Free to Be You and Me, 50 Years of Stories and Songs celebrates the profound societal impact and continued positivity of the groundbreaking 1972 record and its subsequent picture books and TV specials. The exhibition features the only known art from the 1974 publication, along with original illustrations from the book, which was published in 1987. The exhibition will showcase approximately 50 works, including first edition books, the classic album cover, period photographs, audio recordings, newspaper articles, and other ephemera. And I'm going to wet my pants.
Yeah, it's. I think that's something that needs to be seen by our eyeballs. So, ladies, should we call the airlines? Like, what are you guys doing in November?
I know how to get there. I can drive.
February's pretty low key. Maybe let's go February. And this also, actually, listeners, next week we're going to be, our supersized summer rerun is on Picturebook. So it's kind of, they kind of go together, right? I would love to see not just this exhibit, but I would love to see that museum as well.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. Amazing.
Wow. It really, I'm not even kidding when I say it's my happy place. It's one of it's one of the happiest places on earth for me. It's got these big, beautiful windows and you just walk through it with joy and happiness in your heart the whole time. It's just amazing.
Well, I mean, if that's not a testimony,
I know. I'm going to keep my eyes open to see if they have any sort of like special opening galas or anything like that. I just feel like I would need to be there. If there is anything
What if Marlo Thomas was
Thomas
there?
Is there.
Why she has? Why wouldn't she be? She has to be there, you guys, right? How many exhibits have there been of this landmark album? I just don't think there have been any. This might be the first. And I feel like everyone would be there. Maybe Alan Alda would be there. Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine? Mm-hmm.
Maybe they would act out Atlanta. Maybe Marlo Thomas and Alan Alda would get on the stage and act out Atlanta.
Oh, and we sadly just so recently lost Harry Belafonte. So
yes, we did.
Wasn't it pretty recently? Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
it was recently.
It wasn't very long ago.
Well, listeners, you know what? We'll keep you guys updated on this because we know there's some of you that live in that area. Or if you guys get any little tidbits of information that, you know, send us an email, pass them along. But for now, today, please sit back and enjoy one of our favorite episodes, episode 55, The Free to Be You and Me Generation.
There's a land that I see where the children are free, and I say it ain't far to this land from where we are. Take my hand, come with me, where the children are free, come with me.
I just have to get this out of my system. Sad and grumpy down in the dumpy.
Yes.
I say that all the time. When Liam is looking bad, I'm like, oh, sad and grumpy down in the dumpy. And then how many people don't say when I asked Mike about Free to Be You and Me, the first thing he says is, it might make you feel better. And we say it all the time. It might make you feel better.
Hello world, is a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the big wheel generation who stuck their chewed up juicy fruit in the car door's ashtray.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we'll be saving the banjo riff that signaled a revolution was coming for children in the form of an album called Free to Be You and Me.
I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
So, did you guys really put your juicy fruit in the car door's ashtray?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Fruit stripe, big thinking? Red.
I don't know, but I think I was usually wrapped it up in the foil wrapper of the juicy fruit.
Oh, you're good.
Yeah. So, I didn't necessarily, I think sometimes it was just the gum, but sometimes I was good and roll and put it in the wrapper.
Did you guys have, this grosses my family out to no end, and I know listeners had this too. And I know, please, if you did, let me know so I can feel validated. Did you have what's called a gum parker? So mine looks like a little ceramic cat who's laying on his back. And I'm going to take a picture and post it on social media.
Oh, no,
I bought
no,
it
no.
at our school's like book fair. And it looks like a little cat laying on his back and it says gum parker in it. And what you would do is you could take your chewed gum out and stick it in his little tummy. Ugh. And then you could save it.
I'm
so the next day
this.
You could chew. Why? It was my own gum.
Oh my
Why
God.
Would you read?
But wasn't it hard and gross?
Oh, it was hard as a rock. Hard as a rock, no flavor. And sometimes I would even have like four or five pieces of gum. It was like my own little gum wall. Grosses my family out. I'm like, you guys, I'm not like putting other people's gum in
it
my mouth.
Matter. It was
my
own gum. It doesn't matter. That is just, I used to think those people
Why
were
is that gross.
Those people were a little odd. I'm sorry. That's what I always thought. And then I did. I was like, why would you do it? It doesn't. All of those things. It
you know, odd people became flavor. Creative people.
Well, I have a quiz. I have a quiz for you.
Okay.
You guys, who stuck their chewed up gum behind their ear?
No, I didn't do that. I had a gum parka. Oh, why would actually, I need to do that?
That's true. I have two quizzes. Well, now I was going to say it's Violet Beauregard.
Wait, did you?
But now I wonder if it was Mike TV. Was it Violet Beauregard?
No, I think it was Violet.
Oh, yeah, because she was always chewing the gum.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that actually would be a really good reason I would use my gum parka. Maybe it was time for dinner. So I had to put my gum out so I could eat my dinner and then I could chew my gum again.
Why don't you just get a fresh piece? All the flavor is gone.
It was just, can you imagine how my jaws must have hurt?
Yes. That's
oh, horrible. It must have been awful. But how is it any different than if it's in your mouth already than putting it back?
Oh,
how
I'll
is that
tell
any
you.
Different?
Well, I how? Think it's a little Petri dish. Once you've chewed it and added your saliva to the mix, and then it's out in the air, and there's
germs.
Maybe collecting all the environmental toxins.
You know what though? I don't get sick at all, like ever. I never. My whole life, I rarely get sick. So hey, let's just say that maybe it's
like
all thanks to my ABC gum, already been
mm-hmm.
chewed gum.
Okay, I have another quiz.
Okay,
and I don't know the answer to this one. That's why I'm asking you. Who put their chewed up, I think this comes from a book. What character in what book put their chewed up gum on the bedpost?
Well, I've been sitting here the whole time thinking, who was that? So I can't believe you just asked that.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
I was thinking Pippi Longstocking, but I don't know.
Well, don't tell me now, because it's obviously one we both.
People are screaming
at the
radios right now.
Is it Sheila?
Oh, it put it from Sheila. Otherwise known as Sheila the Great.
Oh, do you not know the answer, Kristen?
No, I thought
you were quizzing us because you knew the answer.
I was quizzing you. I was hoping you would know.
Okay,
but somebody out there knows.
Listeners,
you gotta,
tell us, please.
Tell
and
us.
Also, please, if you had a gum parker, just let me know.
Yeah.
You.
Yuck. I can't even believe that was a product.
I'm standing by it. You guys can say ooh all you want. I'm not gonna apologize for my gum parker.
This is it. No more. We're going to talk about Free to Be You and Me now.
All righty.
You. This is a very teary episode for me. It's one of those lump in your throat. Is it the warm ride? I don't know. It's not nipple lightning. Mm-mm. It's more than that. If a banjo riff could make me cry, it would be this. Oh my God, I'm going to cry right now. These are the opening notes to a Gen X tour de force, 1972's Free to Be You and Me. It was in every household and every classroom across the nation, and it told us to be who we are no matter what other people say, including our classmates and our teachers and even our parents. There was the record released in 1972, followed quickly by the book and the primetime TV special that would be rewatched in schools in all 50 states in perpetuity.
Oh, the TV special. You guys, that is what I remember. I think maybe because I'm a visual learner as well. But so I rewatched it a few nights ago in preparation for this episode. And just like a lot of things that we have revisited, I did have that initial feeling of kind of being washed with nostalgia and the warmth and all of that. And I just was back at my living room watching TV. And then this part came on that had Dustin Hoffman in reading. And you guys, it was like I was sucked back into this vortex-like time machine. You know those scenes in TV where you're like, they're showing somebody going back in time and it's kind of spinning like a funnel and the person
like
is
falling down a giant hole.
Yes, that is what happened to me.
I love that.
Oh my God. And I had some feelings about that part too. So I'm there with you, Carolyn. There's no doubt at all that this record and the TV special was well loved. Every word of it, every note. I have a little story for you to just back that up. I was surprised to go to my record collection when I was prepping for this episode and find that I didn't have Free to Be You and Me. So apparently I don't have my copy anymore. And luckily, I found a copy at my local record store, which is really unusual because I never see it in record stores. And so I said this to the guy. I was like, I can't believe you have it exactly when I need it. You can never find this. And he said, actually, I get free to be you and me all the time, but it's always so scratched up, so worn. The cover is so torn. He said, that album is so well loved, I can never put them on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
My copy came from a vintage store. And I mean, I think I audibly gasped when I saw it when I was flipping through the albums. And it was like $3. And it is, you know, usually the three sides of an album cover are intact and you can slide the album out. It's hanging on by like a corner. It's been loved. I mean, I would love to know the stories.
Super hard. Mm-hmm. We have a comment from Gail on Instagram. She always sums things up so nicely, and she tends to sum up what all of our followers are saying. This is what people were saying on Instagram. She said, if we were well-behaved during music class, our teacher would reward us by playing this record on the special hi-fi stereo. The second the banjo intro filled the room, we were mesmerized. We didn't understand all of the words, but we felt them. I think that's just so astute. We were happy and goofy as we sang, danced, and laughed. We were free. Nearly 50 years later, I get the same feeling when I hear that banjo intro.
Yep. That's so true.
And a lot of people feel the same way.
Mm-hmm. They do.
Absolutely. And it's amazing to think of how this whole phenomenon that has just lasted for decades came to be, because it's really just a beautifully simple story. Marlo Thomas says it like this. Honestly, I was just trying to do something for a little girl. Because in 1971, Marlo's niece Dion was in nursery school, and Aunt Marlo loved reading her bedtime stories. But she quickly realized how outdated all of Dion's storybooks were. They were still the same old stories of princes rescuing princesses, or just the formulated happy ending. And she says there was nothing available that would allow Dion to dream her own dreams. And so when she complained to her sister about it, Dion's mom, her sister told Marlo that that was all she could find. And then she said the words to Marlo Thomas that would change history. Why don't you try? And you guys, as we know, Marlo Thomas created something. She decided she wanted to try to do it by Dion's next birthday. And you guys, what a birthday present she created, not just for Dion, but a gift for all of us. And not just our generation, but all the generations that have followed.
That came after. Mm-hmm. She recalls that when she went to look for some different books for Dion, she literally found a book. I can't even stand this. She literally found a book called I'm Glad I'm a Boy. I'm Glad I'm a Girl. And on one side of the page, it would say, boys are doctors. And on the other side, it would say, girls are nurses. And then you turn the page, it would say, boys are pilots. Oh, and the other side said, girls are stewardesses. That got published.
Mm-hmm. You guys.
Somebody wrote that and published it.
That is crazy. And can we just right now say, Marlo Thomas is effing wonderful. I mean, woman, so ahead of her time. When you go back to that girl and who she portrayed in that show, and really stuck to her guns with how she wanted that character played. And the network wanted her to get married at the end. And that's like that.
To Donald Hollinger.
Right. Yeah. And that was supposed to be what would give a happy ending to all females. And she was like, no, I am not going to do that. And stuck to her guns. And the final episode had her bringing him to a woman's lib meeting.
Oh, my God. And I'm watching that show when I'm like 3 and 4 years old. I'm getting these lessons when I'm 3 and 4 years old.
Yeah.
She was at Atlanta.
Sure was.
Literally. Yeah. She literally was. Because
she's like,
said,
you know what? You go do your own thing. I'm going to come to this meeting with me. We'll decide if we want to get married later.
Right.
Maybe
and
we won't.
Didn't
Maybe
you
we
love won't. That? I mean, when you were watching that girl, were you at all disappointed that she wasn't married? I wasn't.
No.
I wanted to be her.
Yeah, I don't. I would have been watching that way too young, and probably at reruns. That wasn't anything that was sticking with me. But maybe it did. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. If you're that little, you don't exactly know what you're absorbing, Michelle.
I know.
And so, really, it's about looking at who you are today and seeing if that message stuck.
You know, I got married when I was 24, so.
So maybe not. But anyway, Anyway, did you take Brian to a women's lib meeting? That would be the true test. So then when Terry, her sister, says, why don't you do it? Then they are off to the races. Uh-huh. Because Marlo Thomas had a talent for gathering important and recognizable people together, including, this is not even a complete list, you guys, Alan Alda, Diana Ross, Shirley Jones, Carol Channing, Carl Reiner, Mel Brooks, Shel Silverstein, Dustin Hoffman, Kris Kristofferson, Rita Coolidge, Roberta Flack, Michael Jackson, and so many more.
And they're also, Kristen, a few names that our listeners may not know, but they should. And that includes mm-hmm. Bruce and Carol Hart. So if you happened to listen to our podcast about the TV movie Sooner or Later, starring Rex Smith, you might remember that Bruce and Carol Hart wrote and directed it. But before they dabbled in teen romance, they were a fixture in educational television. They won an Emmy for their work on Sesame Street. And you guys, if it wasn't for them, Free to Be You and Me would not have existed as we know it. Carol Hart actually produced the project. Her husband, Bruce Hart, along with Stephen Lawrence, wrote the theme song Free to Be You and Me, along with Sisters and Brothers, and they produced the music for the album. It was, they're an amazing couple. They go on to do.
They are. They're a power couple.
Yes. And
it's so weird how they go on to do Sooner or Later to me.
Isn't that weird? It's a big disconnect. And yet we were all there
for it.
The same people. We were all there for it.
Well, and in our episode, we talk about that they actually mm-hmm. had their finger on the pulse of this growing generation. Like, and then these kids grow up. And then now what do they want to hear about? Or what do they want to, you know?
We want to look at Rex Smith.
Exactly right.
I also want to add to this list, Mary Rogers. I know Mary Rogers is the author of one of my favorite books, which is Freaky Friday. And then recently,
Freaky Friday.
I love that book so much.
I freaking love it.
Sorry. And then recently, you may remember that Stephen Sondheim died, RIP. And so, like so many people, I watched the HBO special on Stephen Sondheim. And then they keep talking about Mary Rogers as being one of his colleagues, and they're referring to her as a composer. And I'm like, wait a minute. The author of Freaky Friday is a composer? What is it? Well, of course she's a composer. Because you guys, I can't even believe I didn't know this. Mary Rogers' dad is Richard Rogers of Rogers and Hammerstein.
Wow.
Sound of Music, Oklahoma, Carousel.
That's amazing.
No, that would be amazing. No, Rogers and Hammerstein.
Oh my goodness.
So she is, yes, a children's author and a composer. And she did writing and music for Free to Be You and Me.
Wow. That makes me so happy. I'm sorry that Richard Rogers, you know, his legacy kind of carried on in his daughter. And obviously she left an impression on us. Wow.
Yeah. And truthfully, how many female composers do you know?
Yeah.
I mean, can you name, like, even think of Broadway composers. Can you name any female Broadway composers? And they're out there, listeners. We know you're like, how about this person and this person and this person? Mm-hmm. The point is,
We're trying to get a point across, listeners.
Right. At that point in time, could you say anyone except, like, Rogers and Hammerstein or Rogers and Hart or Cole Porter or any of those people? Or even now, we have Andrew Lloyd Webber, right? We've got all of these men. Stephen Sondheim. Stephen Sondheim gets a special. Mary Rogers doesn't have a special. Mm-hmm. So she was breaking ground, and this was an appropriate place for her to be doing work on Free to Be You and Me.
I think one thing that I'm just floored by is that this is Marlo Thomas's circle of friends. Like, these are just people she happens to have, like, in her little Rolodex that she can just call on up when she's like, I think I need to make an album, and I want to come up with some things for my niece and for all the children out there. I'm just going to call up a few friends, like, and then it's all those people. And because let's not also forget another one of her friends is Gloria Steinem. So Gloria Steinem was one of the founders of Ms. Magazine. And what Marlo wanted to do aligned perfectly with their feature in Ms. Magazine that Letty Cotton, is it Pogrebin? I think it's Pogrebin.
I hope so. Yeah, that's a guess, created.
And that the feature that she had created was called Stories for Free Children. And in these stories, they addressed the corrosive role of sex role stereotypes in parenting and education, because in their view, children needed to be happy, healthy, and well cared for in order for women to make headway in this world. Like, if they can be free to be, then so can their moms. Like even today, when a child is sick, it's probably a woman who is taken out of the workforce, even if it's only for a day. But over the length of a childhood, that can mean lower pay, lower advancement, and a lot less free to be, right? Mm-hmm. And Letty and Marlo, through this project and through this introduction from Gloria Steinem, became soulmates. That's truly what Marlo says mm-hmm. they were. They were wow. soulmates through their wow. work on this album and their shared mission. Yeah.
And then Dionne gets her birthday present.
Yeah.
So
happy birthday.
She, yeah. I know. Seriously. She got a birthday present essentially from Gloria Steinem. So Marlo Thomas gathered all these people and she posed a simple question to them all. They're all gathered in her living room and she says to them, "What lessons or stories do you feel were missing from your childhood?" And I think this is why the record doesn't feel preachy, right? They were not trying to teach us what they thought we needed to know. They were actually trying to go back and nurture themselves and see the things that they were missing. So they're looking at their child selves. And I think that's kind of what we're doing here. We acknowledge that we have children living inside of us. They're still there. They still exist with us today, even though we've grown up. So Alan Alda says he was the artsy kid in school, and that made him a target. And, you know, all the boys are outside playing football, and he's inside writing musical comedy. And so that made him, you know, he got mm-hmm. beat up a few times after school. And so he says that working on Free to Be You and Me allowed him to address really the inequalities that he felt as a kid. He saw that as an equality issue. He was not equal to the football players.
We all yeah. are still mm-hmm. grappling with issues mm-hmm. like that that we dealt mm-hmm. with. And, but, you know, Alan Alda is saying, gosh, I didn't have anything like this album right. or these stories to help me.
And I think that
we hear you, Alan.
What, yeah, we hear you, Alan. But that spirit of it made it something that we listened to mm-hmm. and it imprinted on us in a way that is different if they had tried to, quote unquote, teach us something.
Exactly.
That would have been entirely different.
And I bet when our parents listened to it along with us, they probably were thinking, I wish I'd had this message when I was a child, too. I'm glad yes. my own child is right. having Absolutely. To get to hear that.
So after a long time of looking and pitching to record companies, they finally secured a record deal with a small label called Bell Records after it was turned down by all of the big companies who just, they couldn't get past the liberal vibe, the feminist hippie vibe. And in fact, one well-known record executive that they do not name, but I assume that we would know this name should they reveal it, said, and I quote, "What would I want with a record produced by a bunch of dykes?" mm-hmm. Well, what I'm like, well, sell it and get, you know, sell it to many, 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 many people. And not to mention the fact that, you know, this is a word that is hurled at women because they're not married. Somebody who's not married is automatically a dyke. And most of the women who were working on this project were married to men and had children. And that was the reason that they were working on it. Now, Marlo Thomas famously was not married. And so in their eyes, that makes her a dyke. And you guys, I have been called a dyke more than once in my lifetime, and it's always by men, and it's usually when I've done something that appears to them to be out of bounds.
I don't understand why, well, this is just something I'll never understand, why people think that's an insult.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know.
Isn't that interesting?
Why is that the put down? It's so funny to me that some people think that that is something that's going to bother you. I don't know.
I know.
Right. I guess it does bother some people, and then I don't know.
Yeah, they think that tells you about who they are because they think it would bother you.
Right,
because
right.
it means you are not feminine, as if that is the worst insult. And by you telling me that I'm not feminine, you're just stating a fact about myself that I already know.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Next.
Mm-hmm. No.
So it was an instant hit, both critically and commercially, which was a huge surprise to all the big record companies that turned them down. Even at Bell Records, the company that did take them on, they said, well, you know, records like this, they tend to sell about 15,000. And so that, I think, was their original pressing of it. Well, it went gold immediately. Gold being 500,000 records.
Wow.
It went platinum within 2 years, which is 1 million records. It eventually went diamond, which is 10 million records. And still to this day, it is in the top 100 best-selling albums of all time.
Wow. That is amazing.
It just shows you how much it was needed.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Then and right. now. But before we get to the album, you guys, I would just like to give you a little information about the TV special. Many of us saw that either in school or at home when it first aired on March 11th, 1974. And again, I recently went back and watched a video of Free to Be You and Me, and it was the complete from beginning to end, including commercials. And I just want to say
a tad
about the commercials because they really struck me and stuck with me. The two that, well, three, I guess, but two of them were for Crest toothpaste. And what I thought was interesting is there's not a female in the as the parenting figure.
Right.
It is both times it's a dad.
It's like bedtime stories and time to brush teeth.
And encouraging their children to brush their teeth and why it's important. And also I realized one of the messages they were sending in this commercial was, we didn't have fluoride back then. I'm so glad I can give you this product now that provides you with something I didn't have. What else might I not have had when I was younger that I can now provide you? Could it be this TV special? And so I thought that was really interesting. And then there was another one, and I'm going to now forget what it was for. But there's a mom, and she's a she's a kindergarten teacher. And so she's working outside the home, and it's how she's balancing that. But she's all like, they're showing her how she's at work and doing her thing. And then she comes home, and she and the dad, and I can't remember who it was.
It's for Tang, I think.
Oh, yeah, it was for Tang.
Oh, Tang.
And they're all eating breakfast. Mm-hmm. That's right. Thank you. Then the next morning, and she's saying why that's important.
Tang.
But I like the fact that they showed her working outside of the home.
Yeah.
And that this quick breakfast was good for their family because they could.
She can provide a delicious, healthy, nutritious drink like Tang.
Yeah, for that.
With natural flavoring.
A day's worth of vitamin C.
Yeah, it was kind of. We never had Tang growing up.
Mm-mm. Oh, I was not allowed.
Yeah, I wasn't either. I don't know why.
I was never going to make it to space. I do think it's interesting, though, Carolyn. This is all baby steps, right? It's all baby steps. So those commercials are quite revolutionary, but notice they made her a kindergarten teacher because that's an acceptable profession for women.
Right, and they do talk about that a little bit in the production of the TV show, especially some things that they could have maybe done a little bit more progressively, and they'd even discussed it. Among the producers and the writers, but it was a little bit too much for the time. Like they didn't want to turn anyone off. So let's do these baby steps. Even though they knew in the moment, like, yes, maybe she could have been a high school teacher or she could have been a number of things. She didn't have to be a teacher, but we're going to just kind of baby step into that waiting pool part of the pool until we go into
the
deep end.
Let's soft sell it.
Right.
Yes.
Especially to our friends at the network because, it didn't go over very well with the networks when Marlo went to promote this. ABC was who she was working with. And after they produced the special and showed it to ABC, they had an issue with a few of the parts of the show. One being William's doll. They did not like that. They didn't like the song. The executives asked her to cut that. They said, you're going to make every kid in America a sissy. And that's not the word they used, she said.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, really?
Another C word.
Oh, my God.
SSY word.
Oh, I thought it was an F word.
She didn't say what the word was, but she just let us know that sissy was not. I'm guessing it might be the F word.
I thought it was F word. But I'm only assuming that.
Right. So, yeah, that's just us guessing. And then they all they also requested that she take out the footage where she and Harry Belafonte are singing Parents Are People. And there's a scene within that they're both pushing baby buggies. And the networks thought that made it look like Marlo Thomas and Harry Belafonte were married. And Marlo was like, well, so who cares?
So?
And they said, well, that's never going to fly in the South to have a white woman married to a black man. And at that point, she was just like, well, first of all, it doesn't look like we're married. We're each pushing these buggies. And second of all, who cares? And but Harry actually wasn't surprised. I mean, he just thought, Marlo, this is kind of how it is. But she was not going to stand for it. And she said, you know what? ABC, if you're not going to let me leave this stuff in, I'm taking my toys, I'm leaving the playground, and I'm going to CBS. And that was enough for them to say, all right, it was worth it in the end. because it was watched by 1.2 million households, and it beat out Gunsmoke on CBS. And in May, it won an Emmy, and it was awarded to Carol Hart and Marlo Thomas by Mr. and Mrs. Mark Spitz.
Wow. That is cool. Okay, so the record, I just want to talk about the album cover for a minute. I have it right here. I'm doing some show and tell. Mm-hmm. You guys have your own copy. Mm-hmm. My copy belonged to Jill Schmidt. She wrote her name in beautiful cursive on the front. And I want to show you some things that maybe you didn't notice when you were kids. We all remember the puffy letters and the funny people that are poking out of the letters. But I want to point out something important at the bottom of the album cover. You can see the logo for Ms. Magazine. It's the capital M, the lowercase s, and the period after it. And I recognized this logo as a kid. I didn't know what it was exactly. I knew it had something to do with my mom. I knew it had something to do with women, but I wasn't sure. And above that, it says, in tiny little letters, portions of the proceeds from this album will go to the Ms. Foundation for Women. This record is designed for use on stereo or mono oral equipment by children of all ages, shapes, sizes, colors, and sexes.
You go.
I love that.
Isn't that cool? We didn't even know that was there, but it was seeping into our brains anyway. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then when you flip the record over, there is a beautiful letter from Marlo Thomas saying, "Happy birthday, Dionne," which just warms my heart.
Oh, it's in her handwriting. Also,
it's in her handwriting. It's so cute. And then there are also messages from the editor at Ms. and from Gloria Steinem. And she explains that the money from this record will fund educational projects aimed at improving the skills, conditions, and status of women and children. And it really did. Much more than they expected, because they thought they were only going to sell 15,000 copies. Especially in the areas of domestic violence, healthcare, and job advancement for women. These are not things that we knew when we were children. We had no idea that this is... us listening to this record was contributing to those things. She also says, "Altogether, this is a project born of love. Our only regret is that this record and the change it reflects weren't part of our own childhoods. But then, the children we once were are inside us still." It's almost like a love letter to themselves.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that's the album cover. We're going to talk about some of the tracks now, and people have a lot of things to say and a lot of feelings, and so we're just going to jump right in. The first song on the first side is, of course, the theme song, "Free to Be You and Me," which is performed by the New Seekers, and it's written by Stephen Lawrence and Bruce Hart that Carolyn spoke of before. The New Seekers were a new iteration of the Seekers. And if your parents were folkies, you probably had some other records in your house. They had a hit with "Georgie Girl." That was one of my mom's favorite songs.
Oh, yeah.
I love that song.
Sorry.
I know. I love that song, too. I hadn't thought of it in a million years. The New Seekers. So that's the Seekers. So the New Seekers are most famous for one song. They recorded an adaptation of the Coca-Cola jingle, "I'd Like to Buy the World a Coke." And they reworked it as, "I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing." Which I thought it went the other way.
I thought
"I'd Like to Buy the World a Coke" came from the song "I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing." But it's the opposite.
Yeah, I
had no idea.
I really thought about it. But yeah, I think if that was a trivia question, I would agree with that, what you just said, that it was the other way. Yeah.
I mean, I can envision that commercial.
Oh, so clearly. Yeah.
I wanted to be all of those women with like the flowers in their hair, headbands and stuff. Ugh.
That gives me a lump
drinking
in my
Coke.
Throat. That, you know what? It's also their voices, the New Seekers, because it gives me a lump in my throat that song in much the same way "Free to Be You and Me" does.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a really interesting coincidence. So that theme song is inspired by "This Land Is Your Land," which you can hear. I know.
Love that song.
Funny?
You guys, there's a specific memory. I wail on that song in music, because that one and "You're a Grand Old Flag," give them to me. I'll solo it.
Okay, like, those things don't go together for me, but okay. All right. I did too. I love "This Land Is Your Land." And that is such a folky 70s hit, right? And you can hear it in the lyric where they say, "Take my hand, come along and we'll run to a land where the rivers run free, to a land through the green country, to a land to a shining sea, to a land where the horses run free, to a land where the children are free.
Aww. And wait, did they just rhyme free and free?
Yeah, they did.
Mm-hmm. No, okay.
They did. And then they did free. There's a lot of free. They have license because it's called Free to Be You and Me, so they can put it anywhere they want.
I guess they can, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Carolyn's raising her hand. Yes,
Carolyn's raising
her hand. Well, I have a really interesting fact about the lyrics. So last June, in celebration of the 50th anniversary of Free to Be You and Me, Stars in the House did an episode devoted to Free to Be You and Me. And Stars in the House is a program. It's hosted by Seth Rudetsky and James Wesley. And they invited Marlo to come on and talk a little bit about the show. And then they debuted two new covers of two of the songs from the album. One of those being Free to Be You and Me by Sarah Bareilles. So when she was asked to do the cover, she jumped at the chance. Mind you, they had been asked several times over the years to do for other bands to cover the songs, and they never granted permission. So this was the first time in 50 years they granted permission. And they wanted to rewrite a little bit of Free to Be You and Me, this title song, because the line where it said, the original lyrics, every boy in this land grows to be his own man. In this land, every girl grows to be her own woman.
Every boy in this land grows to be his own man. In this land, every girl grows to be her own woman.
Grows to be her own woman. That's my favorite line, you guys. He just belts it out.
It's a great line, and it was great mm-hmm. in 1972. But as Marlo pointed out, things have changed. And if you're a boy, you might not grow up to be a man. So she went to one of her writer friends who came up with a couple of different versions. And this, what I'm going to read to you right now, is what they came up with. Every child in the land, may you all understand that you're proud and you're strong and you are right where you belong. Take my hand, come with me where the people are free. Come with me, take my hand, and we'll run.
Every child.
Address the fact that this song, it's a living thing, and this is a truth.
It
and
is.
As we mm-hmm. learn more and grow more, we can, it's okay to change these words to this iconic song to reflect more of where we are today. So,
well, and I think the important part of the original line is not every boy in this land grows to be his own man, or every girl in this land grows to be her own woman. I just love it when he belts it out. It's not, that's not the point. The point is his own man, her own woman, that you get to make your choices about where you go.
Right. And that's the message that we got. And that's exactly what we needed at the time. And I think now we can say you're going to be your own person.
You're going to be your own person.
Right.
That is exactly right. And I still, to this day, the song almost locks me down. I have such an emotional response to it. And especially after that part where they do the whole litany of to a land where the rivers run free, to a land through the green country. And then they bring it to a close and you think it's over and it's silent. But then, bump, 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 bump. Oh, my God. And then it's time to dance, right? That's when you got to dance it out.
Mm-hmm.
Dance it out.
Yes. And I also want to say, there's just not enough flutes. There aren't enough flutes in music these days. I love
where are
a
the
good
flutes?
Flute. And these songs have some good flute music. And we're missing that in today's music.
I agree. You know what else we're missing in today's music? Another reason I love this last part of the song is when they go, ba 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 ba. I love bappas in any song. You give me a bappa and I am all in.
All righty.
I need my bop-bops.
Okay, so then we're still now... In case you've forgotten, we're talking about the tracks, some of the tracks on the album. So then we go into Boy Meets Girl. And this is probably, embarrassed to say, but other than Free to Be You and Me, this might be one of the only ones that I have a clear memory of. And so this is the song. It's not a song, actually, as much as it's just a little performance. It's written by Carl Reiner and Peter Stone. It was performed by Mel Brooks and Marlo Thomas and their puppet babies. But I have a very strong memory of the image of this, the visual of this. So I must have seen it in school or at home. They're just puppet babies, but it's just their heads, and they do look like old men, actually. And it was inspired, actually, by the 2000-year-old man sketches, Mel Brooks's.
By Carl Reiner.
By, I thought that was Mel Brooks's 2000.
Well, it is Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks. Yeah.
Oh,
so Carl Reiner wrote this too. I assume with Mel Brooks.
Yeah. And so the premise is simple. A baby boy and a baby girl are in the hospital nursery, and they're trying to find out what their gender roles are by discussing their appearances, their behaviors, and career ambitions. And it's just totally a blast on stereotypes. Like Mel Brooks's baby says, cute feet, small, dainty. Yep. I'm a girl. That's it. Girl time. And then Brooks's baby tells Thomas that she's a boy because she's bald and all boys are bald. And then he asks her what she wants to be when she grows up.
What do you want to be when you grow up?
A fireman.
What did I tell you?
How about you?
A cocktail waitress. Does that prove anything to you?
Cocktail waitress.
A cocktail waitress.
She's a boy and he's a girl. Then the nurse, and then after that, the nurse comes in to change their diapers, and they get a look down there, and basically they're blown away. They're like, "Well, what do you know? I'm a boy. You're a girl." And I read something that said women in gender studies departments at every university should make this mandatory viewing.
I think the most memorable line from that whole thing is something that is said in our house regularly. And Tracy on Facebook brought it up too. So it makes me think everybody says this. What Tracy on Facebook says is, whenever anyone says the word bald, I automatically say bald, 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 bald is a ping pong ball. And it's the same thing in my house.
Bald, bald, bald. You're bald as a ping pong ball.
Hi, everyone. This is Michelle, and I want to talk to you about my post-menopause symptoms. TMI? Not with this audience. Listen, for what seems like 92 years, I've been waking up in the night with a wet pajama top. I know a lot of you know that feeling. I've experienced mood swings, bloating, racing thoughts. Basically, I've felt like I'm living in a body that's not mine. But I'm so happy to report that all of that is changing since I started taking Hormone Harmony. I've noticed a huge improvement in all of those things I just listed. And you guys, I've even weaned off the hormone patches I've worn for the past 6 years. And I'm not the only one who's loving it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And there are over 17,000 reviews where women mention that Hormone Harmony has helped them feel like themselves again. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PCPS for 15% off today. Don't you want to feel like yourself again?
Hello, listeners. If you've been listening for the past few months, you know that I've been experimenting with a new clothing rental membership from Armoire. After the pandemic, I fell into the routine of pretty much not getting dressed at all, ever. I basically had nighttime pajamas and daytime pajamas, and it was a habit that was so hard to break when it was time to start leaving our houses again. Was I comfortable? Yes. But did I look like me? Not really. That's where I thought Armoire might be helpful for me. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. My membership has helped me build a better wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and look a lot more like me than my pajamas did. Is comfort still a priority? 100%. That's one of the things I'm learning as I experiment with new styles. There are clothes out there that feel like pajamas, but I still look like I got dressed in the morning. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then, when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. Right now, our listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/PCPS. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/PCPS, to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
Recently, I was visiting Michelle in Denver, and you guys, I was so impressed how seriously she takes the meals that she makes for her new dog.
It's true. Yeah. Our pup Frankie is a 2-year-old Australian cattle dog, mixed rescue. And since I imagine she probably ate nothing but weeds on the farm she came from, I want to give her the best and tastiest nutrition possible. And that's why I feel so good about giving Frankie Badlands Ranch. Actress Katherine Heigl, she's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation. She says she's seeing more issues with dogs' health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can to support any dog's health, their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs, and it's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And bonus, Badlands Ranch also supports the Jason DeBus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes, just like Frankie. And I'm here to tell you, Frankie loves it and gets so excited when she sees me reach for the bag.
We have a great offer that we are excited to share with all of our dog parent listeners. Go to badlandsranch.com/PCPS and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/PCPS today.
Okay, the next song on the album is When We Grow Up, performed by Diana Ross. And it was surprising to me, on social media, this was the clear favorite. I did not expect that. It was the definite majority, and most of them mentioned Diana Ross, so that means they're referring to the record,
right.
Because on the TV show, it was performed by Roberta Flack and Michael Jackson. Diana Ross apparently did this song in just 2 takes. I think one reason it's people's favorite is because you can hear the maternal feelings in her voice. And honestly, I can't even sing it. Like, I wanted to tell you my favorite lyric, and so I have it typed out. I have it typed out here, and I don't even know if I can read it to you. So we're going to have to play a clip. And then I have written on my notes right now, it says, "I'm crying right now just typing these words." So I'm going to try and read them. Well, I don't care. Oh my God.
Oh no.
Me cry. I don't care if I'm. I can't. Seriously, I can't do it. We're just going to have to put a click.
We have to keep
I'll tell
thing.
You now. Okay. I don't care if I'm pretty at all. And I don't care if I never. Wait, shit. I'm going to start over again. Well, I don't care if I'm pretty at all. And I don't care if you never get tall. I like what I look like.
I like what I look like. And you're nice, small.
Don't have to change at all.
I love that song.
Oh, good. I hope Carolyn's crying too.
Well, I'm just going to add a little Carolyn moment that might make you laugh, but because I texted this to you guys the other day, because my memory is mostly the TV show, I have been listening to the soundtrack in the album, and I just assumed that it was Michael Jackson and Diana Ross singing on the album. So I texted to you guys. I cannot tell the difference between Michael Jackson's voice and Diana Ross's voice in the song. Well, now I know it's because Michael Jackson doesn't sing on the album. He's only in the show.
Yes,
in
oh,
the
that's
show.
So funny. So when you texted that, I didn't realize you didn't know that. I thought you were just like, that's hilarious.
Yeah, because I had just watched the TV special.
Right. Oh, I'm just putting that together now too. I thought you were making a joke.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I did too.
You're listening to Diana Ross going, hey, I can't even tell the difference.
Wait, you're thinking it's a duet between Diana Ross and Michael Jackson, and it's really just Diana Ross.
I am Amelia Bedelia.
Okay, we're all up to speed.
Yes.
Well, I think Kristen and I are a little Amelia Bedelia right now.
Yeah.
Trying to figure that out.
The sad irony that has been pointed out by quite a few people on social media is that Michael Jackson, who was adorable in this piece on the TV show, eventually would bear absolutely no resemblance to the boy who's in the video. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't feel at all like he couldn't change at all. He changed himself extremely, and he's unrecognizable. And when I look at that little boy, you guys, and he's not a little boy, he's a teenager. Oh my God, he's beautiful. He's so beautiful. And it just, my heart is just broken.
I like what I look like, and you're nice, small. We don't have to change at all.
Okay, next we have Parents Are People, which is performed by Harry Belafonte and Marlo Thomas.
Mommies are people. People with children. When mommies were little.
And this is the one that Carolyn talked about where they're pushing the buggy side by side in the park. And it describes all of the things that parents can do. It's written by Carol Hall, and it's emphasizing kind of the role reversal that mommies don't just do baby and children things, and daddies don't just go to the office and play baseball. They can cross. They can do all these different things. And so they say things like, some mommies are ranchers or poetry makers or doctors or teachers or cleaners or bakers. And it was informed by Carol Hall's own children. When she was writing this song, her 10-year-old boy is looking over her shoulder and he sees what she's writing and he says, that's wrong, mom, that's wrong. Mommies can't be doctors. They're the nurses. Oh. And she's like, what are you talking about?
She's like, I failed.
Yes. Yeah. And to add insult to injury, this boy's pediatrician was a woman.
Huh.
So she's like, what is happening?
Because he's getting it everywhere else.
In that book that Marlo Thomas picked up.
Right.
Yeah, but
it's everywhere.
Isn't that interesting, though? Because he's getting at the opposite in really important places, but he's still not seeing that. That's still not that.
And
not
her daughter, too, did not like the line where she says, mommies are women, women with children, because she wanted it to say ladies, because that was nicer. And Carol Hall says this is how she became radicalized, because just like you said, she was doing these important things in the home. She was a single mother working outside of the home to provide for her children who had a female pediatrician, and still they had these attitudes. These messages were taking hold despite what she was teaching in her home, and she said she became a woman on a mission after that point.
I don't blame her. That is amazing that they could have those real life examples right in front of them, but it's society and you know, probably what they see on TV and read in books, like that book you said, and schools that were just telling them the opposite. And that's what they were absorbing.
So she also, Carol Hall, this is kind of sweet, actually. She said she made this a very simple melody. It's a lovely song, but if you listen to it, the melody is super simple. And she did this because Marlo Thomas was not a singer. And she was super concerned, Marlo Thomas was, about this. And she worked really hard with a vocal coach to be ready to do this album. And if you think about it, her voice is the one that we think about on this album. She's on almost all of the tracks.
Yes.
And she's not a singer. For her to take that on, how ballsy
is
that?
Yeah. I just, after listening and watching again, I was dumbfounded by how talented Marlo Thomas is. I mean, there's the singing part.
Yeah.
But the voices, when you go back and listen to some of the spoken word parts, and you're like, she did all of the voices, but yet there are four different characters or something in the part, and they're all read by Marlo Thomas. Like, ladies first.
And it's isn't that voice just imprinted on your soul?
Yes.
Whether it's the singing or the stories, that voice that she was so concerned about is literally imprinted on my heart. So 87 Ragged Tiger, our friend Shane, known as 87 Ragged Tiger, on Instagram said this, and I think a lot of you would say the same thing. He said, I still say, ladies first, just like Marlo Thomas did. And what do you mean there are not enough mangoes to go around? You can just hear her voice, right?
You can hear her, yes.
So the story is that, of course, this little girl says ladies first, and she ends up getting eaten by the tigers first because she insists on ladies first, ladies first.
Well, a couple things. One, currently, now realizing Marlo Thomas was all the voices. She was even the tiger voices. She is just a talented woman.
Agreed.
And I love those little kind of messages at the end. Yeah, the subversive messages like, oh, she got what she deserved. You don't have mm-hmm. to show us the tigers eating her or whatever, but we know what happens mm-hmm. to her.
Yeah.
And that's just, I love those. I feel like mm-hmm. smart when I figure them out. I don't know.
When you're 56.
I think I figured it out. That was what was kind of fun.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad. Yeah. Okay, so the next one on the album is called Dudley Pippin and the Principal, and it comes from a picture book written in 1965. So Dudley Pippin is about a boy who's reprimanded by his teacher, and he begins to cry, and he's very ashamed. But the principal says, "Well done. You did that very well."
"But only sissies cry."
"A sissy is somebody who doesn't cry, because he's afraid people will call him a sissy if he does cry."
And then he inexplicably pulls out a flute. I don't exactly know why this part of the story goes this way.
It's the early 70s. Let's just
it was so psychedelic. Yeah, it's so psychedelic. And he starts playing his flute music. But it totally works. It's very mesmerizing. And then it smoothly and quite appropriately leads into the next song, which is...
"It's all right to cry. Crying gets the sad out of you. It's all right to cry."
Oh, you guys, it's all right to cry. And lots of feelings about this song. So mm-hmm. I think I've shared before that I felt, since my dad didn't have any sons, that I kind of needed to know about sports. And I just always acted interested, and I think I was. But I knew who Rosie Grier was ahead of time. So it was exciting to me that this thing that I knew from my dad was on this record and on this TV show, and that we listened to it together and we watched it together and we had the conversation that it's all right to cry. And I will say to this day that my dad was very, he was a very emotional man, and he did cry. But mm-hmm. I think that some of the things he struggled with in life were that he was told he shouldn't cry, like from his mother and all of that. So
of course.
When we now as an adult, and I think sitting and listening to that song together was again, he was being soothed. That child in him was being soothed by this NFL football player. And and as an adult now, I think, God, that was really, he needed that. He needed that probably more than I did, because I saw him cry. And I mean, it was still, I guess I noticed it when dad cried, but I don't know. It impacts me in even a different way now. It was then that it was this cool thing, because I knew who this football player was, and we could bond over that. But now I think it really touched him. So I love that song.
That's amazing, Carolyn.
And let's not forget that, I mean, these are adults that are coming up with these songs and these ideas mm-hmm. because in one of the early gatherings in Marlo Thomas's New York apartment, and you guys, can you just imagine being a fly on the wall in one of those early gatherings?
I know.
Right? Herb Gardner said, "I'd like to have heard that it wasn't a sissy thing for a boy to show his feelings." So as a grown man, sort of like your dad, mm-hmm. He's saying, "This is what I wish I would have had." And then they create this song that's comforting the little boy inside of him that always felt bad for crying.
And so I have to clarify that you said Herb Gardner, not Herb Gardner. So I was like, Herb Gardner was at the meeting?
Herb Gardner.
Herb Gardner, which was actually her boyfriend at the time.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah. But isn't that interesting that he literally said those words out loud, and then they're like, okay, so we need a song about crying. Who should we get it? How about an NFL football player to do it? And then did you hear this, Carolyn?
Which is brilliant.
I know. About the origins of those lyrics?
I don't know that I did.
Okay, so the song is written by Carol Hall again, whose children had the female pediatrician and thought that women couldn't be doctors. So she went to her kids' class and she asked them about crying. Tell me about crying. Tell me about your feelings. And they literally said, "Crying gets the sad out of you." And they said, "It's like raindrops from your eyes." And those become the lyrics of the song. And those are, again, are lyrics that get imprinted upon us. Crying gets the sad out of you. right? We know it.
Raindrops from your eyes. It's going to make you feel better.
I just have to get this out of my system. Sad and grumpy, down in the dumpy.
Yes.
I say that all the time. When Liam is looking bad, I'm like, oh, sad and grumpy, down in the dumpy. And then how many people don't say, when I asked Mike about Free to Be You and Me, the first thing he says is, it might make you feel better. And we say it all the time. It might make you feel better. So originally he was supposed to speak the words, Rosie Grier was, and he insisted on singing it. And they're like, oh God, can this guy sing? And he, again, indelible.
Yes.
His mm-hmm. voice is absolutely indelible. And then he improvised at the very end of the song. You might remember the song is over. Oh, God, I'm going to cry again, too. And I don't mean to make fun of his voice. It's just that this is how he says it. He says, it's all right to cry, little boy. I know some big boys who cry, too.
It's all right to cry, little boy. I know some big boys that cry, too.
And that's just improvised. And they said Marlo Thomas like jumped up and threw her arms around him when he said that because he so got it. He knew why they were there.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting. We've been talking about how there's all these adults that are coming up with all these songs and concepts and things to teach. But you said that they, you know, went to the school and they're talking to children and they're almost using children as their little focus groups. And, and you know, the song Sisters and Brothers, which is the next song on the album, you see in the TV special, this really lovely gathering of all these little children. And when I saw that, when I was rewatching it recently, that something pinged inside my head too, where I was like, oh, I remember this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so cute. And there's Marlo Thomas looking just ridiculously beautiful with the long, you know, the long straight, this is early 70s, right? So long, straight, dark hair parted in the middle and the giant eyelashes. And that's how I wish I could have looked in our Lake Minnetonka magazine.
I want to look like that every day.
Yeah.
I wanted to look like that my whole life.
To the children, tell me about your sisters and brothers and all these cute little early 70s kids are being very, very honest with her. Mm-hmm. And the way she responds to them is just lovely. And everything they say is fine. Like one of them's like, I don't like, you know, she's like, I wish I didn't have a brother. And she's like, you do? Like, oh, like what, you know? And well, cause you know what's me. And she's like, what? He raises his fist.
Yes.
It's me. And, but she's just so accepting and she just reflects their feelings so well. And she would have been an excellent child therapist. She would have been an excellent teacher. Actually, she sort of became that, really, without all the, you know, maybe the titles. That's actually what she's become. And she's such an advocate for children. So I just love that they spent time talking to children about this as well.
Yeah. And then that leads right in the video, that segment leads right into the song Sisters and Brothers, which is this huge celebration of dancers in the park, which is how I want to live my life every day.
Sisters and brothers, brothers and sisters, ain't we everyone? Brothers and sisters, sisters and brothers, every father's daughter, every mother's son.
Yeah, can we learn that choreo on those pillars?
Yes, please, on the pillars.
All we have to do is just do this.
Yeah.
You guys, if you're on Patreon, if we put this on, you can see it.
But yeah, they're doing it.
And then
the
little dance they do, they step, they kind of march, and then they turn, sisters and brothers, and they turn the other way, and then they turn around,
it's sort
and
of
they
like
don't
in,
fall off.
They don't fall off the pillars.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like in our Solid Gold episode, we like that Solid Gold epitomizes what dancing looked like in the 80s. Mm-hmm. This epitomizes what dancing looked like in the 70s.
It does.
So Sisters and Brothers is, they switched it. It's the normal gospel greeting, because this is a gospel-inspired song, is brothers and sisters. And they turned it around to be sisters and brothers. Because why does the boy always come first? Wow. And this is something that I am a stickler on. Mm-hmm. Whenever Mike and I are signing things, like we're buying a new car, we're signing a mortgage, I'm like, no, I sign my name first. And he's like, why? It doesn't matter. I'm like, trust me, it matters. Oh, but if you look closely at this part of Sisters and Brothers and those beautiful dancers and the people who I want to dance with in the park, well, you don't even have to look closely. It's very clear. There's a girl in the front who has long black braids and very blunt bangs, and you will recognize her from
Electric Company. That is June Angela from The Short Circus, my favorite dancer and singer in The Electric Company. And she's front and center in this video.
I love it.
And then we have William's Doll, performed by Alan Alda and Marlo Thomas. This comes from a picture book by Charlotte Zolotow. And I think a lot of people have a lot of very strong feelings about William's Doll. The grandma is the hero of the story here, which makes a lot of sense because grandmas are very wise and they see things quite plainly. And she says, well, of course William should have a doll because, duh, he might have a baby someday. And I remember as a kid feeling so indignant. Like, parents are so dumb. Like, this is not a radical idea. It's just simple logic. And these idiots couldn't get it. And I just felt so grateful for that, Grandma. The record includes a book of lyrics. And just reading the lyrics to this song, I got all choked up. It's when she says, and Bill said, baseball's my favorite game. I like to play, but all the same.
I'd give my bat and ball and glove to have a doll that I could love.
And Marlo Thomas, for not being a singer, this singing is almost plaintive. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a plea. She's really giving a plea. Like, I love baseball, but I would give my bat and ball and glove to have a doll that I could love. And it just makes me all choked up. So there was some criticism about Free to Be You and Me in general being too heteronormative, as if William's Doll was a cop-out because the reason it's okay to have a doll is because he'll be a father someday and not that he might be gay or, you know, anything else on you know, the continuum between these
Can
two
I ask
things.
A question about that?
Yeah.
Is that a criticism from back in the 70s or is that a criticism
it is.
Today?
Oh. It is from back in the 70s, yeah.
That's actually,
I don't know how close.
Yeah.
To the release it was. I agree.
Because it's almost like they could, in some situations, they couldn't win. It almost seems
totally.
Like, right?
Yeah. And imagine if it was because Bill was gay. Imagine if that was the case, that record would have been banned. Absolutely.
Well, because it is interesting that there's not any song about children being gay.
No, there isn't. Mm-mm. There isn't.
Well, she's received a lot of letters and stuff from gay men that this was, it touched them. Like how they heard it as a child was that it was
okay.
This was the
first time they got any signal that it was going to be okay, that they were okay the way that they were, despite the fact that it was because he was going to be a father someday.
But also, can I just say something? And I think this goes without saying, I just have to say it, that just because like a little boy wants a doll, like it doesn't mean that they're going to be gay when they grow
Very
up.
Good
like,
point.
Like that
yes.
should be the message too, that you don't have to have a doll just because you're going to be a father someday. You don't have to love a doll because you already know that you're gay. You could just, you don't have to know anything except that you want a doll.
Right. Like, and that's it. That's all that matters.
That's all that matters, right?
And actually the message could have backfired if it had been that William was gay, because then people would have linked those two things together and thought, yes, indeed, when you want a doll, it does mean that you're gay.
That makes me angry, yeah.
And if you're gay, you can be a dad too. I mean, I feel like this message was also like,
it's all whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's a fact, something about this. I was just going to say, because it was such this, there people criticized it so much. I learned that this song alone caused a toothpaste company to refuse to sponsor the TV show, which obviously wasn't Crest because we've seen the Crest commercials.
Oh, they
wouldn't
got another one.
So I wonder if there was someone else before. Yeah.
And I bet Crest came in and was like, and we're going to put all men in our commercials putting their children to bed.
Yeah, maybe.
I bet they did. So this was a very meaningful story for a lot of people. And when I look back at it, I wonder if part of my strong reaction to it was not just about this little boy, but about the fact that I didn't want a doll.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. And literally, I'm just putting this together as I'm listening to it this week. As I'm prepping for this episode, I'm like, is that why this is so meaningful to me? Because if William wants a doll, it might also be okay for me not to want a doll.
Right.
Wow.
I know. Except Baby Alive, because she does stuff. And that's cool. I liked Baby Alive because she does stuff.
She grows
But
mold.
Otherwise, no. I didn't want a doll. And that was very awkward in some circumstances.
Oh, I'm sure.
Me not wanting a doll. Unless it had some mechanics inside. And it's not like I'm mechanical or science-y. I just thought it was cool.
Right. Yeah. And imagine
just
being
the mildew.
Given these things as gifts, like from your grandmother or from your parents. And you know, do you announce that you don't want it? Well, probably not. You've been taught manners. Do you think something's wrong with you? Like, everybody thinks this is something that I want and should have. And that has to be hard. So I'm sorry, little Krista.
And are you... Thank you. Because that is an issue. Because then are you disappointing someone when you don't want that doll?
Or me? Like, why don't I want it? Like, why does everyone think I want it and I don't? Is there something that I'm doing wrong?
It's very complicated. Yes. And it all becomes internalized. Mm-hmm. It all turns back on yourself. And I think I was pretending. Like, oh, thank you. And I'm going to go play with my dolly now. But it was all very loaded.
Oh, definitely.
It was very loaded and I felt icky.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's hard to be a kid. Okay. Next on the album is Atalanta, which is performed by Alan Alda and Marlo Thomas. And this is a big favorite of people's too. Alan Alda actually directed all the performances on the album, and he wanted to use sound effects and really make things come alive as if it was a radio show. And you hear this especially well on Atalanta. You hear it in all the poems too. If they talk about pots and pans, you hear pots and pans. And so Atalanta is one of the best examples of this. I think this is the pinnacle of the entire project right here. This is Marlo Thomas's story. She doesn't want to get married. And she also very pointedly made sure that Atalanta had dark hair.
Well, it's because this goes back to her bedtime story for Dion. I mean, mm-hmm. she wanted at least one story on the album about a princess who wasn't blonde
mm-hmm.
yep. and who didn't have to get married at the end. And so it was Betty Miles who updated the ancient myth of Atalanta, but she made her brunette because in the ancient myth, she's blonde. So she switched her hair to brunette and she gets to decide for herself if she's going to marry mm-hmm. the prince.
And the story, I think the most impactful part of the story is this race at the end in which, you know, the winner is supposed to be the husband for Atalanta, and Atalanta swings a deal with her dad. Well, what if I run the race too? And if I win, then I get to choose, or I don't have to choose. But uh-huh. then we have young John from the town, and he's interested in being in this race, but he doesn't want to marry Atalanta unless she wants to. And what he really wants to do is talk with her. And I think what she's doing here is really showing us what we should be looking for in a potential partner.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Young John is who we want.
Right. But you know what struck me? I just really was kind of sad about her dad. Like, I was thinking, do you love your dad, Atalanta? Like, he's putting you in. And even rewatching it, I kind of remembered thinking that, like, is her dad bad? And is she going to, like, ever come back and visit him? Because even when they tied, she mm-hmm. said, like, or he said, you know, basically, you didn't win. Like, since you tied, John gets to decide. And I thought,
yeah,
you didn't listen to your daughter. You're mean. I don't like that.
Oh yeah, he's not. I don't.
That's so interesting.
I don't know, for your dad, you just think
you look very down in the dumpy right
now. Yeah, I mean, at sad, that age, I just couldn't imagine like not loving your dad or your dad being mean and doing something mm-hmm. that you specifically said. Please don't do that. I don't want to marry someone and like not listening. And this man, your dad, doesn't care and is going to do this thing that will make you sad. I don't know. It was hard for me.
That is a really interesting take on this story. I wonder how many other people had the same kind of feelings, because I think most of the people were focused on Atalanta and whether or not she was getting married. And here poor Carolyn is like, but your dad is mean.
Yeah. And like, are you going to go?
I think sadly, Carolyn, many people, probably a lot of people listening too, were like, yeah, that's my dad.
Yeah.
I mean, you were just lucky to have a nice supportive dad.
I was. And at that point, you think everybody does, you know, when you're that age.
Yeah.
So
that's true. So during the race is really where you can hear Alan Alda's directing. This is where it really shines, because Atalanta and young John are neck and neck. And so when they're speaking the lines from the story, they're speaking them in unison, the two of them. They're reading the story together. And you can hear the footfalls. And Marlo Thomas says she remembers running in place so that when she read, she would sound like she was breathless. And the effect is just really intense, I think.
John didn't give up. Nothing at all thought he would keep me from my hope of winning the chance to speak with Atalanta. And on he ran, swift as the wind, until he ran as her equal, side by side with her, for the golden ribbon that marked the race's end.
Atalanta was aware of him, and she raced even faster to pull ahead.
But young John was a strong match for her. Smiling with the pleasure of the race, Atalanta and young John reached the finish line together, and together they broke through the golden ribbon that marked it.
And of course, the race is a tie. They crossed the finish line together. And the message of equality in that reading, it rings clear. I don't know that I understood that when I was listening to it when I was a kid, but when I listen to it now and they're speaking together and they finish together, equality equals equality. That's mm-hmm. what we're looking for in this record.
And he gives her a handshake.
Yes, he does.
And they go and off to explore their worlds on their own before they're going to decide. Maybe they'll get together, it says. Maybe they'll meet up again.
Do you think she goes back and visits her dad at all?
Yeah, no. I do. I think she visits her dad. No. Does she get married to young John? I don't know. Yeah. But you know, the truth is, yes, she's going to come back and marry young John because no other man in the village is going to be that cool. Right? If you think about
it. But she might not get married at all.
Or she might not get married at all. Right. That is
true. And maybe she'll marry a woman. We don't know.
That's true. We don't even have any idea if she swings that way. So,
that's right.
Right. Who knows? And we also know that Marlo Thomas famously resisted, well, she resisted getting married to Donald Hollinger in That Girl, and then she famously resisted getting married to Phil Donahue even. They did eventually get married, didn't they?
Oh my gosh, yes. Right.
Yeah.
They've been married since 1980, I think. They've been married a very long time.
Isn't he dead?
No.
Oh, he's not dead?
No.
No, not dead.
And what's very interesting, if you watch that Stars in the House episode, he must not be aware that she's on this Zoom call, and you can see her looking up, over
Please
here.
Please tell me he's in his tidy whities walking back.
Pretty much. So, not actually tidy whities, but you see her looking up at someone you don't know. I'm assuming. I bet that's Phil Donahue. Is he going to pop in and go, "Hi, guys"? No, he doesn't. He walks behind at some point, in his undershirt, and I don't think that his hand was but he was just all disheveled.
Beautiful girl and boyland.
Okay, Girlland, performed by Jack Cassidy and Shirley Jones. This is written by Mary Rogers and Bruce Hart. Do you guys remember in our very first episode number one of the Pop Culture Preservation Society, and we're playing a game called Name That Cassidy? And the point of the game is that I would name a title of a song, and then you would tell me which Cassidy sang the song. And I gave the title Girlland. And do you guys remember what she said?
We said it's Toyland. It's Toyland.
You did. You insisted it was Toyland.
Because it's the same tune. We weren't thinking of this record, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And I'm like, no, you guys, it's Jack Cassidy, it's Shirley Jones, it's not for you, it's Girlland. Like, no, it's Toyland. And so it eventually got cut from the episode because we couldn't agree. Let's just confirm that it's Girlland, yes, by Jack Cassidy and Shirley Jones. And this is nobody's favorite song. It is scary and creepy. And it's very ominous, and nobody likes it. And I think that there's something to be said for the value of the song, but it's scary sort of in the same way that clowns are scary. Jack Cassidy comes in, he's like a carnival barker, and he tells us what Girlland was like.
Wonderful Girlland, the island of joys, where good little girls pick up after the boys. So come on in, look about. Go in a girl and you'll never get out.
It's very frightening. But then if you tune into Shirley Jones at the end, they talk about how Girlland has turned into a park, and it's a park where you can be who you are and you can do what you want. And so really the point is right there, but I don't think I ever got to the point because I was afraid of the scary carnival barker.
Well, and I just want to backtrack a little to Toyland. So that's a different song, but it is how this song starts. Mm-hmm. It is with
it samples it essentially is what it's doing.
And I've always felt that way about the Toyland song. So I'm guessing I probably picked up the needle on my album because I don't have any recollection of this song at all. And when I've been listening to it, I thought, I got creeped out just from those first lines. I've never liked Toyland. I'm sure I just skipped the whole entire song. I'm not going to listen to this. And I never did. Yeah. So it sounds yucky to me from
even when Toyland is played.
I'm actually kind of surprised that it made it on the album because it's so ominous. Mm-hmm. Because it's so ominous. I don't get it. Okay, and the very last song on the album is Glad to Have a Friend Like You.
Glad to have a friend like you. Fair and fun and skipping free. Glad to have a friend like you and glad to just be me.
Performed by Marlo Thomas and again written by Carol Hall, who... kids have the female pediatrician. And the reason that we have this song is because one of the goals of...
I just can see that.
It doesn't make any
sense.
As a
trivia quiz at some point, like,
yeah,
what? Writers, children at a female pediatrician.
Yeah.
Carol Hall's. Okay.
So the point of this song is that one of the goals of the project is that boys and girls can play together. They should play together. And if we can play together without preconceived notions, sexism will fall away. Stop categorizing us and let us gravitate toward things naturally, as opposed to the girls play with the girls, the boys play with the boys, girls play these things, boys play these things. And it reminded me of my story about Miss Keatley, my gym teacher in elementary school, from our episode about gym stories, about gym horror stories, because Miss Keatley would take us, we would come to her class in our girl lines and our boy lines. And as soon as we got to Miss Keatley, remember, I didn't know if Miss mm-hmm. Keatley was a boy or girl.
Right.
And she would put us in people lines. And now I realize what she was doing is she was trying to mix us up so that we can be who we want to be. We don't have to categorize ourselves and do separate activities. And I always wondered if Miss Swartz, who had put us in our girl lines and our boy lines, was irritated when she came to pick us up at Miss Keatley's class and we were all mixed up in people lines. She never put us back in girl lines and boy lines. We walked back to our classroom in our people lines. But now I realize what Miss Keatley was doing.
Mm-hmm. I bet she loved this album.
I bet she did. I bet she did. Okay, so the effect of Free to Be You and Me. There was a backlash from conservative religious leaders, especially James Dobson. I bet a lot of your parents had James Dobson books on your shelf because he wrote a lot of parenting books. And there was even a very famous New York Post article that Michelle's going to tell us about right now that actually this is not from a long time ago, if I'm correct.
No, and I feel like we seem to have two camps here. So I'm going to just summarize a debate that was still going on Free to Be's 40th anniversary, you guys. This is a debate that was still going on just 10 years ago. From a March 8th, 2014 New York Post article by Kyle Smith. It was called How Free to Be You and Me Emasculated Men. So basically the end. Like,
yeah.
we know right away right. What Kyle Smith's point, you know, what his stance is. He calls Free to Be a piece of Ms. Foundation produced feminist propaganda disguised as entertainment for children. And he goes on to say about the TV special, and I just have to read this because it's so offensive that I don't even want to paraphrase.
Oh, wow.
The show, this is what he says. The show, which is of course unwatchable today, except perhaps in states with generous attitudes toward self-medication, such as Colorado and Washington, was an hour-long special that meant to tell little girls they could be anything they wanted and little boys they could be anything they wanted to, provide that what they wanted to be was girls.
Ouch. And wrong.
Right.
Really. Yes, this is what he got out of this. He also says, the program's most searing and indelible moment was the horrifying sight of Rosie Grier, a huge man once known as one of the most ferocious players in the NFL, strumming a guitar, listen to what he says, smiling like a brain donor, and singing, It's All Right to Cry. Mm-hmm. He then blasts Dudley and the principal, alluding to some sketchy wrongdoings after they go off into the forest.
Nice job, buddy.
Yeah. After dissecting Atalanta and somehow deciding it emasculates men and renders them genderless, he says, he says, no wonder that the girls of the free-to-be generation would grow up to buy millions of copies of 50 Shades of Grey. So 40 years of gender re-education later, the only place they could find masculine men anymore was fiction. Okay, as if 50 Shades of Grey means, like, as if BDSM means, like, a man is masculine. As if the men portrayed right. in 50 Shades yeah. of Grey. As if this type of, oh, my God, I can't even.
It's so uninformed. You can't even form a response to it because it lacks so much knowledge about who we are, about who other people are in general.
Well, and let's not forget, this is only 10 years ago, and guaranteed.
Wow.
This camp is still. Oh. Of thought is still very, yeah. very.
Trust me, I went down my rabbit hole to look up Mr. Kyle Smith and see what his yeah. latest tweets were. And
oh, I can only imagine. So Emily Shire immediately slaps back at Kyle Smith in her Daily Beast article, cleverly titled "Free to Be, Did Not Emasculate Men."
Yeah,
I love that. It was
Who
literally
are you
like
to?
3 days later, she writes an article and she Good. Just calls it "Free to Be, Did Good. Not Emasculate Men," mm-hmm. and she says she was shocked to be having to defend this 40 years later, which is what
yeah,
I
that
said.
Hurts.
This is ridiculous. So she called his analysis convoluted, sexist, and borderline homophobic, and went on to defend Rosie Grier's performance pretty much as we or anyone. Would do with a working brain, I would like to think.
Yeah. And all of the people who love it.
Yes.
Have you ever heard anyone who doesn't like that performance? I've never once in my entire life went, oh God, I hate It's All Right to Cry.
No, but also Nobody. To, also let's go back to Kyle Smith. Like, let's just hit below the belt and be like, what, like a brain yeah. donor? Like what? So she says, well, she defended it as nothing but a wonderful thing for a boy to see a big man, a hero telling him it's all right yeah. to cry. That's so impactful. How is that anything but impactful? Anyway.
Right.
And I don't need to go into all of Emily Shire's individual slapbacks, although I do like how she says that him saying it's understandable that those of us in the free-to-be generation buying millions of copies of 50 Shades is a completely heteronormative presumption that masculinity is a quality only exuded by men who have sex with women.
Oh. Mic drop.
And then what I think she says that is most impactful about these issues and these ongoing issues and this ongoing debate is this. She says, you see, the larger message of free to be is not actually about redefining masculinity or femininity, but rather learning to be comfortable with who you are and no conforming to some outside expectation. That someone could write something so simplistic and chauvinistic about gender roles reveals why free to be is still relevant and needed 40 years
Absolutely.
Later.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's why it sold over 10 million copies. Right. That's exactly right. Because we still have people who need to hear the message. It's not about, it's not saying to girls, you should want to work and you should want to be doctors.
No.
It's you should do exactly what you want to do. You have the freedom to do that.
Yes, you should grow up to be whoever it is you want to be. And can I just read you something that Gloria Steinem wrote in this book when we were free to be looking back at a children's classic and the difference it made. So Gloria Steinem wrote an essay in here and she says, and this is just from, what was this, just 10 years ago as well, I believe. She says, now the question is, when so much has changed, when an African-American president has brought his two young daughters to live in the White House, female athletes are running faster than Atalanta, and homophobia is giving way to equality in marriage and the military, why is free to be still beloved and almost as popular as ever? I think all we have to do is look around. Way too many little girls are encouraged to be silly, seek approval only from boys, and be mean to other girls. They are also sexualized younger than ever by media, ads, and popular culture. Boys are exposed to cruel and dehumanizing war games, not just in movies and TV, but now also on smartphones and home computers where they enter into the conflict. It's not surprising that bullying has become a major danger. People of color will soon become the majority in this country for the first time. But instead of celebrating the fact that we now look more like the world, some white Americans are so dependent on old hierarchies that they are rebelling against government and saying no to democracy itself. So yes,
oh my
there
God.
Has been a lot of progress, but there has also been a backlash against it. Nowhere is it written that progress will win. It depends on what you and I do every day. I suggest you read Free to Be, You and Me Again.
Clapping for Gloria.
Yes.
I mean,
because
seriously,
I think it's so
I feel
true.
Like we should
think,
just end the episode right there.
Well, and because we can talk about this, like, do we think this worked for us, right? We
yeah.
can say,
mm-hmm.
do we think by listening to this and being exposed to this as children in the 70s, this changed our paths? And I would say yes and no. A lot of the same things that were still working against us in the 70s are sadly still working against
That's
boys
true.
And girls today.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that I could say definitively yes. It did. I feel like for us, I think it's an individual thing. I think that we can all say, Yeah, that, you know, I'm a little boy and it made me know that it's all right to cry. Or, oh, I, you know, I'm a little girl and I learned from Atalanta that I can make my own decisions and I can be strong and independent and not have to get married or anything. But I think that the children today still need it. So I don't think absolutely. We can say that it worked and now we, and it worked and it changed everything. And now we can put it away. I think the message is that we still need it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think when people get very upset and say that it didn't work, because I do hear that from people, I can't believe we're still talking about this. How it didn't work at all. But just the fact that you're ranting about the fact that it didn't work shows where your values are. And how is it that that message didn't seep inside your brain?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're upset by the things that haven't changed. That means it did work on you. But like you said, we're talking about a larger society here. But even in terms of society, even though those things do still exist in a scary degree, in a way where we still have to remain vigilant, I just look at the kids that exist in my neighborhood and my kids' friends, and they're is not a single person that doesn't have some sort of free to be you and me aspect about them.
I do believe that the generation now that are in their 20s, and maybe even in like younger than that. I mean, I just think it's getting better and better, and that kids are feeling like they can be free to be who they are, and almost regardless of what their parents think.
Oh, absolutely, regardless of what their parents think. So I think to sum up this conversation, I'm going to read you the back page of the lyric booklet, which was included in the record. So if you turn the booklet over, there's a note from a woman named Dr. Dorothy Cohen, who is the author of a book called The Learning Child, published in 1972. And she says, "The many gifted participants in this work have poked fun with undisguised pleasure at the attitudes that have been taken seriously for centuries. By raising doubts about traditional restrictive models for men and women alike, the record opens up for children the happy vista that all individuals, male or female, are people above all." And in 2021, the album was deemed culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant by the Library of Congress and selected for preservation in the National Recording Registry. Thank you so much for listening today.
Thanks so much to everyone for listening and supporting us by sharing our podcast with others and by rating, reviewing, and following us wherever you listen. That's apparently very important in the podcasting world, and it's the only way we will keep getting heard and for Amy Poehler and Tina Fey to hear us as well. And a special, special thank you to our supporters on Patreon for quite literally helping this podcast keep on trucking. Today, we are giving a special shout out to patrons Lisa, Natalie, Nina, Lorna, and J.S. Frisch. Frisch. That was my mother-in-law's maiden name. I wonder if JS is related. Thank you all so, so much. And we hope you're enjoying all the fun content, the exclusive content over on our Patreon page. If you want to check it out, just go to patreon.com and type our name, Pop Culture Preservation Society, in the search bubble. And if you're not able to join us on Patreon at this time, don't worry. We appreciate your listening ears and your support and your just sharing our podcast every single day. Thank you.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast, courtesy of the cast of Three's Company. Two good times.
Two happy days.
Two Little House on the Prairie.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu, nanu, keep on truckin', and may the force be with you.
Love and hip, we'll keep moving on.